it's the big show. Hang on, let's start again. No. I've been losing. I've last week on the Max show, right? I left it till it started recording, and then I barely got me in going. It's the Max show. I don't know what's happened. There's like a delay, so I need to give like 20 seconds recording time. Here we go. It's the Max show. No, it's not. It's the fucking big show, you idiot. Tosser.
Serving pints up a little early there. Well, I guess you're not early where you are.
Tonight. Normally, I'm shit-faced, but I haven't drunk tonight.
Maybe that's the problem.
There's
your problem right there.
Your blood content is too high in your alcohol stream.
I know.
Sharon has a wife, ? Oh, dear. Yes. Right, we're going to start again. At least I'm recording all of this for my posterior. It's the big show. Yes, we're to discuss the week in technology. Doc Rock is supposed to be here, but according to Kelly, he's hungover. We know a song about that. But he might dive in later, just before the end. Joining me to discuss the week in tech, great panel. Starting me off, line one, Jeffrey. Where you been, mate?
I've been doing well, and sorry I was a little late showing up.
Sorry.
As it turns out, I realized I didn't have pants on, and if I needed to stand up and do anything while the show was happening, it was probably going to change the demographic quite a bit. So,
but you never have pants on.
I do at the moment, and it's a good thing because in the pre-show I actually had to get up and close the blinds and Kelly wanted me to stand up and show off my shirt, and all of those things involved being seen below the waist.
Okay, very good, mate. Now, have you been following on with our Jeff Gamet number?
Oh, you play the song. I could have left my pants off and you could have just done the song.
No. We've been sitting figuring out.
Oh, yeah. And we need to do shirts where it says my Jeff Gamet number is 1.
Exactly. Right. But I've thought myself into a bit of a corner with this, but I think I've sussed it. You are the only person in the world who has a Jeff Gamet number of 0.
Indeed.
I believe you're right.
Because here's my logic, right? I'd be thinking, well, no, because it'd be 1, because of course he knows himself. But that's not the point, you see. It's the person's number about how many steps away they are from Gamet. So there is someone who has a Jeff Gamet number of 5 billion. No one has a Jeff Gamet number of 0, apart from
except
you.
Me.
Another instance of where Jeff Gamet is unique.
Yeah, that's true. And we do need to get some shirts that say my Jeff Gamet number is 1.
Yeah, but my Jeff Gamet number on the front.
Because I think for most people, that really is their number.
Yeah.
At least in the podcasting world.
We'll do that. We'll definitely do that. Next to Jeff, Kelly G.
Hey.
What's up, girl?
Not a lot today. How about you?
Yeah, no, not too much, really. I've potted around finishing off a video and sending it over to someone. And tidying up in the office, which is something that is an entire day in itself, I have to be said. It's not as clean as yours.
You know that Calvin and Hobbes strip where it shows him sitting on the corner of the bed and he looks all nice and neat and the rest of the room is disaster?
Okay.
That's my office.
I've always said to people, you know, the camera shoots in a V. So mm-hmm. Anything that's not in that V isn't in shot. So plain and simple. Mm. And it's a bit like that here. If I gave you the shot up here, you'd be appalled. What have you been doing today? Any work or not?
A little of this, a little of that. I just fired off a podcast with Jeff earlier.
You're today. A wheeler dealer.
It was.
You
could say that.
Are you selling hijacked motors off your drive or something like that as a part-time thing now?
I wish.
Yeah, you're slowly breaking down a Chevy into spares. No?
That's a good idea.
That's a great idea.
I am now, yeah.
Yeah, now come think of it. And last but by no means least, first appearance on the show, Rob Walsh from the 411 Podcast. How you doing, man?
Thank you very much. I'm doing well.
Thank you
for having me on the show.
Nice to meet you. I do hope we won't scare you off.
I don't think you'll scare me off. My full-time job is working with podcasters, so I'm used to podcasters.
You make a full-time job out of that. That's so cool.
Yeah, but then
With Libsyn, so yeah.
So tell us a bit about the 411 podcast, mate. What can people expect to hear when they tune in next week?
Well, Podcast 411 is kind of on a hiatus, but it's Today in iOS is my daily, my weekly show. So Podcast 411 was my first show. I started that 10 years ago, and that was interviewing other podcasters. And I need to release new episodes, but Today in iOS is the one I release on a weekly basis, and that's all about iOS. And it was the first podcast about the iPhone.
Oh, right. Okay. Well done, mate. I guess the title is probably a bit of a giveaway.
Well, it used to be Today in iPhone, since it wasn't called iOS originally.
Right, okay. Brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
The Week in Tech, what has been going on? Well, it's not been a good week if you're two people that live in Northern England who went and stayed in Oxford in a hotel that they found on TripAdvisor. Because they left a review which was bad, and the company has fined them £100. They've reported them, though, to British Trading Standards Offices, and Trading Standards are investigating and believe that they may have breached several trading standard regulations, so they might be getting a kick in. We like that, sorry. If you're Uber...
Oh, Uber.
Oh, where to
go
start?
Go home, Uber, you're drunk.
Stay away from sharp objects. City of Toronto has told them to cease all operations because they've been existing without a license in the city since 2012. So there's a bit of crap kicking off over there with that. Plus also, someone made some comments and then said, of course, the comments that I made are not reflecting the views of me or the company I work for. Well, who are they reflecting then, if you made them? Bit lost there. They've been suggesting that they're going to target a female journalist with some sort of slur, I guess, to try and put her off the hunt of the fact.
They want to dig up information about her. They wanted to hire people to dig up information about her and make that information, hopefully unsavory information, public so that she would be nicer to them in the future and not report on things like the fact that they have virtually no background check and some really sketchy characters work for Uber, the fact that they have other people who do nothing but something called God mode, where you can see everybody's pickups and endpoints and when those things were, and having an Uber exec show up at the end of your ride waiting for you there and showing that he could see on his phone where you were going.
That's not good. Anyway. And if you're Microsoft Azure, not exactly the best day as well either for you, because Azure disappeared overnight and they've had some trouble with it. So if you're a third party, you rely on it. Oh, well. Office 365 was down as well on Xbox Live, although I did play on Xbox Live this morning, but don't tell the wife.
Our lips are sealed.
Thanks, man. And of course, it's Feminist Hacker Barbie Day. The hashtag,
don't take away my story, Ewan.
It's already back to that day of the year again.
Yeah. This will be an annually commemorative day. Kelly will talk through that much later on. In fact, Kelly, start us off, girl.
Let's just start. So Barbie, I'm sure people are aware, is a thing. She is a unbelievably unrealistically proportioned doll given to little girls the world over so that they will feel really horrible about themselves when they grow up and cannot look that way. That about sum it up?
Yeah, I gotta say there's quite a few people who spent most of their lives on the rack in Elizabethan times who didn't look that way afterwards either. And they'd had the best chance.
You would have to remove two of her ribs, I believe. In order, if she were a real person, she would have to remove two of her ribs to get that waistline.
Oh,
and she wouldn't
be
able to stand up because of the weight of the rest of her.
Her legs are like 48 inches, so.
It's ridiculous. But anyway, neither here nor there. She is a multi-bajillion dollar, give or take, marketing force. And so there was this book that's called I Can Be, and there's a series of these books, these Barbie books, I Can Be, and she can be all kinds of, you know, whatever things. And one of those things turns out to be a computer engineer. Sort of. So the book, somebody found the book at their friend's house and was like, hey, this looks awesome that I can see, you know, Barbie as a computer person. That sounds pretty great. So she flips through the book. And at first it says, Barbie decides she wants to build a game. So she's sitting at her laptop trying to build a game. And then she says, she's just a designer and that she needs this guy and this other guy to turn it into a real game. Number one. Number two, then she ends up having a flash drive in her necklace that has a virus and infects her computer, infects Skipper's computer. And now, you know, she's trashed Skipper's homework. It's all a bunch of crap. So Barbie screws it all up. Barbie's computer teacher says, well, maybe your USB stick is the reason that you had a problem with the file. And then she has to take the computers to the two guys who will help her with a real game. And the two of them save the day. And then she goes back to computer science class and takes all the credit for it. It is the dumbest plot line. This sounds like something I'm making up to try to make somebody come after me with a torch and a pitchfork. And it is so not the case. It actually
is a thing that happened. Kelly, you left out the important part, which is when Skipper's computer was trashed and she lost all of her files, all of her music, and all of her photos, Barbie and Skipper giggle and then have a pillow fight.
Oh, I did forget about the pillow fight. Yeah. All my music is gone off of my computer, thanks to my stupid sister. So my reaction is, let me just hit you with a pillow. So yeah, it turns out Mattel also makes the Ken version of this book, which is 20% more.
That's a lie. Yeah, go
that's
on.
That's a joke. Yeah. there you go. I knew someone would get there with me.
Although I've got to say, having taken my daughter shopping in Toys R Us for various things, and she has looked at the Barbie stuff because she has got a Barbie doll. Ken's clothes are 20% more expensive.
And
well,
he's
makes
not an
more,
astronaut.
So
there's 20% more of the clothes.
I guess so.
Oh, that could be it. So yeah, it's infuriating. So isn't the word, but basically that's what it is. So eventually, Mattel came out and apologized and said, we're going to make it so that this isn't a thing anymore. We're going to, you know, pull the book. But everybody's like, everybody's like, what do you mean? Because this book is from 2013. So it's sort of dumb. But the internet, being the helpful entity that the internet is, the internet has come up with a remixer for the book. So you can download it with blank stuff instead of where the words are, and you can build your own thing. So
and people have.
Oh, I spent most of this morning.
Yes. And they're beautiful.
Oh, they're great. It does look fairly old because there's one of the pictures that I'm showing at the moment, and the dude, Brian, looks like he's plugging a SCART cable in the back of the monitor. And what he's plugging it from looks like a Neo Geo. Games console.
Yeah, I thought it looked like a GameCube. Wow. So yeah,
and yeah. And she's holding a CD-ROM,
mm-hmm.
which I just
isn't
know,
that cute.
No, yeah. So it's to be fair, let's just play a tiny bit of devil's advocate here. A lot of Barbie storylines are about overcoming adversity, but
yes.
The thing I will say is Barbie tends to be the one that overcomes the adversity. She doesn't
not causes it.
She doesn't pull in contractors for that.
Yeah.
So
well,
she does cause it too.
A lot of times, and a lot of times they get it right. And, you know, I've read other stuff that didn't make me want to set fire to it when I was done. But this was just really aggravating. And anyway, so like I said, the internet has helpfully sorted that out for Mattel, which has been really entertaining to watch. It was actually especially entertaining to me because I was never a big Barbie doll person. My mom really wanted me to be, and I just couldn't get there. And eventually, and it was because I kept stealing all my brother's Star Wars guys because nobody would buy me Star Wars guys. So eventually the compromise was I got a 12-inch Barbie doll sized Princess Leia dolly. And so
okay.
that was how we worked
that was
it out
the start.
Yeah, you know, it worked.
That's like UN level resolution.
Kind of was.
That's impressive. Your mom and dad. Props. Definitely.
Yeah.
Superb.
Princess Leia warped me forever because she did all the stuff the boys could do. And so it never occurred to me that that was, that there was any other way that things were supposed to be.
I'm sorry. She kissed her brother. So, you can't.
He kissed her and he didn't know. And
It was his fault.
Yeah, it was closed mouth.
It was a closed mouth. No,
she kissed him. She leaned in over the bed. And gave Luke a bit of a smooch.
Because you don't know everything.
She kissed him twice. She kissed him in Star Wars for luck, and then she kissed him in Empire.
This is just way too...
To get Han mad at her.
Yeah.
Is this just too geeky? What was the time code on that one then, Rob?
At the end of the was actually near the beginning of the first act.
Yeah,
I guess near the end of the first act. It was right after.
I'm kind of glad that Kelly picked this story, because I'm not sure there's a lot of really comment that you could make about this story much.
Like, that's the thing about this that has astounded me, is that everybody who's heard this story has been like, yeah, that's dumb.
How did this book get through Mattel's review process?
There can't be a woman that works at Mattel. That's all I can think of.
That's what I'm thinking, that there are no women that are working there.
Hang on. I'm going to take some issue at this point, because one of the things I put out today was a bit of a bite at the fact that anyone who's a social with an ist on the end of it, takes the opportunity to take something and blow it way out of proportion. But the suggestion here is that all men are the ones that save women. Well, that's bollocks for a start. And the second suggestion is that all men are not sexists, they're misogynists. And bollocks, we're not.
No, so I'm not saying that at all.
I've got to take an issue with the fact that there's obviously no women in Mattel. There might be quite a few women, and there might be quite a few women who just would pass that storyline, because it's the long line of successful storylines that go out in a run of books that no one bothers to check particularly heavily anyway. But it's not okay, and I wouldn't condone this in the slightest. But you can't just say, oh, it's a management that's devoid of women, clearly, because a woman would have stopped this. People make mistakes. People make social errors. Full stop. And it's people. It's not men, and it's not women. I'm not having that.
I'm not saying that that some guy sat down and went, I'm just going to show Barbie is a complete idiot. Like, that's, I'm not saying that at all. But I would like to think that if any woman working at Mattel had the opportunity to approve or not approve this book becoming an actual thing in the world, that she would have said no. And it amazes me that no guy sat down at Mattel and read this and went, back the soul train up a minute. Who thought this was okay?
You nearly swore then. Good girl. Well pulled.
I tried.
I've been very impressed lately with Kelly's ability to avoid being censored online.
That's very nice. I've got to say, well done. I'm very, very impressed with that one. Thank you. You've saved me editing this weekend, and I'm working, so I'm very grateful. Any comments to add, Rob?
No, I'm not going to touch this one with a 10-foot pole.
I like Rob.
So now we know who the smart person on the show is today.
I just get so sick and tired of everyone saying all women are dumb, all women are one thing, all men are sexist, all men are misogynist. No, they aren't. Because all the women that stand up and go, do you know what, I had a really great dad. Well, he wasn't a misogynist, clearly. So, not all men are. Some, grant you, but not all. Jeff, what did you bring with us? Save us, mate.
All right. This story is probably a lot less inflammatory. So, Google, you know, they want to have internet everywhere. They are now launching weather balloons in Australia to start getting internet coverage in places that previously had none at all. So it's part of a test program. I just dropped a link into our chat room so people can see the article. But Basically. Okay. So here's what they're doing. They're calling it Project Loon, and they're popping 20 popping's a bad choice of words. They're launching 20 balloons into the sky above Northern Australia so that they can have radio transmitters for Wi-Fi access in the area. And on one hand, I look at this and I'm like, wow, this is awesome, because these are areas where people previously had very limited options for communication, and this will expand those choices for them. On the other hand, do people need to be worried that Google is now putting balloons in the sky, and do they have a new way of siphoning off information and collecting data about people?
Yeah, because Google would never do anything bad with that data.
No, of course not, because Google.
I don't know, they do. Yes. They try and sell you some crap, but
yeah. Well, I mean, we are the product for Google.
Yeah.
I mean, they are selling us, and so to me, this is a case where we walk the line as consumers between getting something that's really valuable, in this case, internet in areas where previously it simply was not an option, and giving up maybe some privacy in the process.
I mean,
my concern is the transparency on this. And as long as Google is upfront with what they're doing with the information they collect about the Wi-Fi traffic or whatever, that would be awesome. I wish that I wish everybody did that and was very open and upfront about it and didn't bury it under a bunch of terms of use or whatever. But if it turns out that this is one of those things that they're doing so that people kind of forget about all the bad crap, then cool. It's kind of a nice idea to be able to create internet access where there hasn't been any really before.
I agree.
And honestly, how many other companies out there would invest the money to do something like this? And I'm not sure if there's anyone else that would really step up and throw the cash at a program like this. I think this is a Google thing and no one else. So in that sense, it's really cool that they're doing it.
But I mean, to be fair as well, that surely it's in their best interest to get as many people online as possible. The only thing you would say is that the bang for buck with this is probably not there, that they're not getting that many people on based on a huge expenditure, though.
There's a reason they call it Project Loon.
Yeah. I was waiting for that.
Yeah, it's actually really funny.
What's going to happen the first time a big storm comes through? I mean, so, you know, anytime there's a good storm, you lose your internet connection.
There are still parts of the United States where that's the case.
Yeah, okay. That's true. Maybe Google needs to launch a few balloons here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because there's a not insignificant portion of the United States that still has dial-up access. And if that dial-up access is predicated on using phone lines that are very old phone lines, then when it rains a lot and the ground gets wet and the water gets into the phone lines, the connection becomes crap. Said the girl who used to do ISP technical support for one of the wettest places in Oregon. I know this is to be true. It sucks. It sucks a lot. And there's still a lot of people who have dial-up as their only means of internet access. So it's entirely possible that it could suck here just as bad when the weather sucks.
I mean, the thing that bothers me about this is I'm looking at the pictures of it here. I'm desperately trying to get a picture up to show on the video feed, but I can't at the moment. There's a lot of me just looking at it going, but how does it stay still? Because they can't anchor these things. That would be ridiculous. And I can't understand how they're... Who's calling?
I bet it's Hawaii. Now we all have to whisper.
Well, I mean, they can actually tether it. I mean, they can, if it's only going up a couple miles, they can tether them.
Hello.
Hello, Doc.
But would they want to?
But surely a plane would fly into them. That's all I'm bothered about. But
yeah.
I don't know. It's...
The military does this with blimps. They put up blimps to do command, control, communication.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe a couple of thousand feet, I suppose. Mm-hmm. That'd do. And you'd get a fairly wide coverage from that.
Sure. And if you have several balloons in an area, well, mm-hmm. there you go.
Yeah.
But the balloons, I mean, how often do they have to be refilled? Because it's
question.
Not like they won't leak their gases.
Some over time, yeah.
Yeah, no, they'll have to, but the problem I've always got with Google is the fact of how much they just walk away from. I mean, the stories about them walking away from Google Glass this week.
oh yeah,
you know, Sergey's left it in the car, or Larry's left it in the car, or whatever. And you're like, oh yeah, righto. and here we go, it's Buzz again. It's all the things that Google have always walked away from, and I can't think that they've seen anything through. Other than Android. And I think the only reason that they've seen Android through is because they can't walk away from it because it's so successful. If it wasn't as successful as it was, they'd just go, okay, and they'd wash their hands of it. They are OCD, not OCD, what's the attention deficit corporation. They spend a lot of money doing stuff that never, ever comes to full market value.
That's true. Yeah, they start all kinds of projects and then just walk away. And
they don't generate revenue. That's their philosophy.
Right. And okay, so we have a couple of things here. First, Google is willing to take risks and try things out and see what works. And because of those risks, we have some good things and we have several things that just are gone. And then we have the other side where they have created this world where people don't really understand anymore what beta and experimental mean. Okay, so look at Gmail. Google left that as a beta product for years. And most people didn't even realize it was still something that was in beta. And so we've gotten desensitized to what beta and test means. So Google rolls out something that they're just experimenting with, and immediately people expect it to be a long-term project or product. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, that's not what happens. And they kill something and people freak out. There are times when they kill something and I think it's inappropriate. Like when they killed the Google News Reader system. Because they had gone in and they just killed the RSS market.
That was hugely popular as well.
Yes, yeah. But it didn't make them money, so they killed it. And what they could have done is rolled that back out as an open source thing and just let the community take care of it. But instead, they took over a market and then just killed it.
But there's the dichotomy, if you like, of this whole thing is someone saying, well, yeah, but it doesn't make them money, so they stop it. But then none of the stuff that they've killed makes them any money anyway. So you know, Gmail makes them nothing, apart from the fact you've got your contact details. Buzz never made them anything. Google Glass, based on the amount of R&D they've had to put into that, there's no way on God's green earth that they're making any money back on that at the moment. I can't even believe that any of the Next stuff has really probably made them any decent kind of profit. So there's tons of stuff that never makes them a profit, and there's tons of stuff they just walk away from, and they don't make stuff that they can make a profit from because they never see it through, apart from Android, which they don't make anything on anyway.
No. As podcasters, Google is not your friend. That's
right.
Just a simple fact.
Yeah. Dude.
They've done nothing to help us in the podcasting world. So soon, I'm sure Feedburner will be gone too.
Well, Feedburner's
I totally agree with you. It's just a matter of time. Mm-hmm. It's not an if, it's a when. Feedburner is walking dead.
It doesn't, I mean, it's crap really? Anyway. When we've used it, it's always given us really, really bad results. But that's because of the way the server's set up, I think. But I think Google Hangouts is a positive for podcasters, surely.
Yeah, sure. Somebody figures out that they should be monetizing it and they're not. That's not a
specific thing. Google Hangouts is a valuable tool for many people, but it's also one of those tools that I really don't want to get that invested in because I'm assuming that it's going to be shut down.
There we go. Yeah. I mean, it is Tom, you know, we've got Tom Merritt on the Mac show tomorrow, but you know, that's his MO, if you like. It's his route to the net is Google Plus, Google Hangout. If they take that away, mm-hmm. And they're never going to take YouTube away. I can't remember seeing killing that either. I don't know how much money that probably does or doesn't make for them.
Yeah.
Hello, Doc.
Aloha.
So glad you could join us. Was it a good night?
Yeah, actually it was. It was kind of epic to be dead honest with you.
No kidding.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. No, I just totally forgot. And I looked at it right before I went to sleep, and I said, oh, no problem. I don't have to start until 10, so no way I ever sleep until 10 o'clock. Of course, I woke up like 10 minutes ago. That never happened, but it happened today.
Never mind, mate. Never mind. We don't care. Good story, Jeffrey. I love what Google do sometimes, but I just... their lack of...
They're a frustrating company because they do some really cool things, exactly. But then they do some pretty crappy things along with it.
Definitely. Rob, what did you bring us as a story?
My story is about the story about podcasting being back. And Marco Ament had a really nice article about, no, podcasts never went anywhere. And it just, I hate seeing these recently reporters, I guess, they forget about podcasting. Then all of a sudden one person reports about it and then they go, oh, well, if no one was talking about it, it must've gone away. So because they weren't following it, now it's back because they are following it. And Marco, for those not familiar with Marco, he's the creator of Overcast and before that Tumblr and Instapaper. Had a really nice point that no, it's been here. It's been growing strong. And podcasting just keeps growing year after year. And that's, you know, what I've seen at Libsyn. For those that are not familiar, I work at Libsyn and we host more podcasts than anyone. And we've seen more growth in the years that a lot of these articles were saying that podcasting was down.
No, so, I mean, we've only ever had growth. We've never gone backwards on numbers.
Yeah, it just keeps growing. And there's some articles recently saying, one of them was great. It was like, great in a bad way. It was like the reason for podcasting growth is being able to play them in cars. So it was like cars were the reason. I'm like, no, it's mobile. People are listening in their cars, but they're listening on their mobile device, not because of the dashboard and integrated smart cars.
That's not what did it. But right now,
the growth that we've seen in the last few years, podcasting is now 65% mobile downloads. And in by the way, it's a 6-to-1 ratio, iOS to Android.
Yeah, I think
really?
That's... Yes.
I think...
Wow.
Well, wait, we got to dive into that a little deeper, mostly because of my hangover, but 6-to-1 on iOS. That's
crazy.
6-to-1 ratio, iOS downloads to Android downloads. Yep.
That's crazy because everyone balks about how much, more pervasive Android devices are. And it just goes to show you what that's going to be mean. I shouldn't say it, but I say mean things. Screw it. It just goes to show you the ninnies that buy Android.
Well, if you want to take it down to a per device level, there's 4 times more Android devices. So it's really on a per device, you're talking a 25-to-1 ratio of downloads for podcasts for iOS users to each Android user.
Hey, Kelly would tell you, since this is the first time you and I being together on the same screen, that I'm going to say right now, Kelly would know I would always say that. Damn, that's gangster.
Well, someone asked about Windows Phone. Windows Phone is growing. I would gather to say in a couple of years, there's a good chance you'll see more podcast consumption on Windows Phone devices because there's a native player on Windows Phone. Then you'll see on Android devices because there is no native player on Android.
Yeah, that's true. You have to.
I think that's one of the things to think about as well is iOS has got the iTunes store and and the podcast app, which is pretty good at doing the gathering of podcasts. So also as well, if you look at the shows that are listened to an awful lot in iTunes, there's a lot of Mac shows that are listened to in iTunes.
Android shows are pretty big. There are some really big Android shows in iTunes that I see in iTunes. There's a couple of shows in networks that have both Mac shows and Android shows getting more Android downloads for the podcast than they do on their iOS show, and they get more of those downloads for the Android show come to iOS devices than to Android devices.
Yeah, I mean, and I can speak from our own experience. We've got the Pocket Show is all about comparisons of iOS, Windows, and Android, and we can fill that panel three times over with iOS people week in, week out, and we struggle like buggery for Windows people, and the one that's the hardest of all three to get a panelist on for is Android. It's really difficult to get anyone to come on that show and speak up for Android. Despite that fact. So I think there's lots of reasons. But, I mean, the other thing that surprised me as well is that we're 60% video now. And we were always kind of, well, video's just a bit of play thing. I'm sure hardly anyone watches it, but we've got to do it because everyone else does it. And we're 60% video on the Mac Show now. 25,000 downloads on the Mac Show, and 60% of them are video and they're mobile.
You know what's really interesting, Ewan, and I would love to ask a question, I guess, to you as well, is if I've always done mine as video for the simple reason that it was easier to host a video file, which is like 10 times the size of an audio file, but it's easier to host a video file than it was to host an audio file. And with the exception of like going into like Libsyn, and I think one of the things that I was always afraid of, if I were to get to Libsyn, which is kind of stupid now I think about it, I was always afraid like, well, what if it gets too big and like my bill is going to be ridiculously expensive? Because with video, you just slap it on the Squarespace or stick it on the YouTube and you're done.
I would say this. If you're going to do a podcast, most podcast downloads are audio. In a lot of the shows, when we have shows that do both audio and video and you look at the numbers, it's 10 to 1 on the audio download to the video downloads. Like Gary Vanderchek's back and he's doing both audio and video, and it's 10 to 1 his audio to his video. It's the same exact content, just some is audio, some is video. A lot of people that consume podcasts, and most of the podcasts in iTunes, when you look in iTunes, the top ones are audio because people are consuming on mobile devices and there's less bandwidth requirements. If you're going to do both audio and video, what I would suggest, put the video just up on YouTube, do it as audio for a podcast only. And then that way you have just the one podcast in iTunes as audio. And then over, if they want the video, they go to YouTube, and then you don't have to worry about the additional expense of hosting the video.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. And I watched Gary on the YouTube, because you kind of got to see his dumb face, but I guess I would listen to more of it if it was just on my car or, you know, like walking around on my bike or whatever.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The numbers are astounding. And you heard it first here on BTN.
It is. There's no way on God's green earth that podcasting is dead. Not a chance.
Oh, no.
Just anecdotal.
No, it never went anywhere. It just keeps growing. Every quarter we see increased growth. Every quarter, more shows, more downloads. You know, we were 1.9 billion downloads last year. That was a new record. This year, it's much more than that already. So,
now, if podcasting was dead, what would I be doing every day?
Jeff Gamet would be, well, you'd climb into a bathtub and you'd slit your wrists longitudinally, mate.
And no one would know because there wouldn't be a show for me to talk about it on.
Oh, I'm sure we could get that on video. Yeah.
That was the thing that I wondered about was, When this story started going around about, oh, you know, podcasting was dead and it's back now. I'm like, I've been doing at least two shows a week for like 5 years. How is it possible it died and I missed it? So
it's just bad reporting. And then one reporter reports it and then another one. And I actually had a reporter contact me the other day and he said, hey, you know, I'm doing this about podcasting back. I went, well, first off, you should start over and look at it how the other people got it wrong. I go, because it didn't go anywhere. And he's like, what do you mean? And I went over numbers with him. He's like, oh. So he was disappointed. I mean, so, like Marcus said, so some of these reporters want to make a story out of this. Or their editors told them, here's a story. Go, you know, go figure it out.
Yeah.
I think one of the issues is getting numbers out of people, because for the life of me, podcasters seem really reticent about giving out the numbers that they have.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get why. I mean, it's not a competition. There's the people that are electing to listen because they enjoy the content. They're not listening through popularity.
Well, so. Most male podcasters would rather give you the true measure of their manhood than their downloads.
Yeah, no. It's true. Wow. And it's the stupidest thing out there. And it's what it, I think it's one of the reasons that podcasting suffers financially in getting serious kinds of backing and sponsorship is the fact that, that people aren't, that they don't take their numbers out for a spin. And a lot of people out there are going, okay, well, we'll pay you 20,000 per thousand listeners, or £20, $20 per thousand listeners or whatever. That's a stupid rate in comparison to someone that is electively downloading what you listen to. I've got a professional magazine that I subscribe to, and they don't get 25,000 people per month that watch, that read that magazine in their ABC figures, and they're charging £1,400 a page in advertising and getting it.
Good heavens.
And I'm just, you know, besides
the advertising and the lying is where the issue comes in, because what happens is some advertisers will leave the numbers they're told. They advertise on a podcast that they're telling the, you know, the podcast are saying I'm getting 100,000 downloads. They pay based on that number, and then they look at the return on investment, and then they walk away going, well, podcasting sucks. No, the person just lied to you about their numbers, or artificially, you know, the other one is that people are Twitter bombing. What they go out and they do is, They tweet over and over their past episodes, and they just have a bot. And there's one guy, literally, he did 150 tweets an hour, every hour. He's been doing it for a week plus, a couple weeks plus, over and over, links to his old episodes. He had an episode, he had 100,000 downloads. Of that 100,000 downloads, 62 were to iTunes. That's it, 62. Not 62,000, 62. His total subscriber audience was like 200, but he had 100,000 downloads. What do you think he's telling the advertiser? His audience size, the people that are listening, or all these bots that are hitting his show? He's talking about the bots.
Yeah.
Right. And bots aren't going to buy products.
Nope. Nope. It's the difference between having listens and listeners. And you really need to work on listeners when you're a podcaster, not listens.
Yeah, no, I agree with that totally. But I think there's an awful lot that podcasting's got to do in terms of changing the way that people see its in engagement with advertisers. But I mean, how print media at less than 25,000 per month can get away with £1,400 per page of advertising, and their 50% advertising in the magazine that I read, and there is no ROI on that whatsoever. That other than someone says, "Oh yeah, I read in this magazine."
Well, and the other thing about it is that a lot of people will, when this first came out and people sort of went, well, what do you mean podcasting is dead? And someone else was reading, had written another piece, and I don't remember if it was Marco's or not, about, you know, podcasting isn't dead, but there's some things that maybe are causing it not to be as accessible as it could be to a lot of people, things like that. And then, of course, it turned into a whole bunch of people getting all kinds of butthurt about what it was that people were actually saying. And what it really ended up being was, I really like podcasting and I want it to be better. And here's some things that would make it better and make it even more popular. And, you know, and it just turned into, oh, internet outrage, you know, fire up the outrage machine. And here we go again.
I think a lot of people listen as well because of the fact it's not a corporate outlet. I know we get a lot of people enjoy the fact that we just come and sit and shoot the breeze about stuff and don't really care what we say. Some of it may even just be, you know, tangibly libelous in what we talk about, but it's all done in good nature and good fun, and none of us take ourselves too particularly seriously. And I think people also like that, whereas when corporations, and I have the greatest respect for CNET. I think they do a great job, and I have the greatest respect for Leo. I think he does a great job and has done for years. But when you get into that kind of corporate mold, I think you lose some of what the podcast industry is about.
Well, and that's one of the things that I really like about getting to podcasts, and particularly like if I pick something, you know, without sponsorship and without having to be beholden, you know that I'm picking something because it's awesome and I really like it, and not because somebody wrote a big enough check.
No.
And that's one of the things that I like about getting to talk to people and about listening to other shows, is that it's, for me, it's easy to tell who is recommending something because they really do like it and use it every day, and who's recommending it because the check didn't bounce.
And if you're thinking of doing podcasting, then of course there are the great people at Libsyn that you can go and talk to. Or you could go and talk to UK2.net and say, how do you fancy sponsoring my podcast? Which is what I did 6 years ago. And I'm going back to when bandwidth was friggin' expensive. We were talking about a mortgage payment per month for the bandwidth that we used to use. And going back to that time of day, UK2 were the ones that stepped in and said, yeah, we'll sponsor you. Don't worry about the bandwidth. We'll pick that up. So they give us unlimited server space. Every show we've ever done, you can go back and get video or audio. And they pick up all the bandwidth as well. So no matter how many people download anything that we've done, they'll pick up the charges. And the server that they've given us would cost us £400 a month if we had to use it. We had a little blip with it this week. But good old UK2, who've got the best tech support out there, no question. You raise a ticket and a couple of hours later we were back up and running. So thank you very much to them. They're absolutely superb. We cannot say enough good things about them. And if you would like them to support you, then send them a message. You never know what they might say. They may actually even say yes. And we've got a cool competition coming up with them in the next couple of weeks. They've had some special sweets made. They're a limited edition set of sweets, and they look like poker chips, but they've got the UK2 logo on. And we're going to have a couple of hundred of those to give away. So,
ooh.
Watch this space. The ones I don't eat, anyway. Doc, what did you bring for us as a story?
Cool. This story, to me, when I ran across this, was very, I don't know, I want to say near and dear to my heart, because one of the very first things I ever did when I published a YouTube channel way back in, I guess I want to call it 2005 or 2006, when they first opened up, there was this commercial that used to run here in the U.S., and it was called finallyfast.com, right? And it used to come on, and it would tell you about all of the problems that your PC could have, and this person downloaded this software from finallyfast.com, and all of a sudden their PC was brilliantly fast and running smooth as a grease tit. The thing that was funny about the commercial was in the commercial, there would be an iBook G3, and it would have a picture of Windows like 2000 or Windows XP running on an iBook G3. And the email, the icons were like 80% of the screen. And someone would say, oh, man, my PC is running fast. Then they would show you another cutaway where the guy's behind the machine on a desk and he's typing away furiously. And it was a giant iMac, and they would cut away to the keyboard to stick on the price that this is only $19.99, but wait, if you call right now, you can get two sets of this software for $19.99. It'd be laced over an Apple Pro 101 extended keyboard. And so I made a YouTube video making fun of the fact that this PC software, they would continuously put on the top, it only runs on PCs, but in the commercial, they had like three Macs in it. And I was like, this is the biggest scam I've ever seen. And what happened was that was the first video where I got like 100,000 views and all kind of funny comments. And I got a letter from that company and Google that I needed to cease and desist or I was going to get thrown into the jail with some dude named Bubba.
Oh, right.
And I just really, really found that hilarious that at the time, Google would even back up such a piece of crap company that was obviously scamming people. Well, they have since changed their name about 80 times, and they still run every day. If you watch the Science Channel, Discovery Channel, or anything related to travel where old people watch, they run this commercial called PC Cleaner Pro, and they have a kind of a famous actor. He used to play in a TV show called Soap, but he's kind of one of these famous D actors who's always been in everything but never really been a thing kind of actor. You know the one I'm talking about?
Hey, it's that guy.
Similar to Jeff's podcasting career. I'm joking, yeah, Jeff.
Very much like that.
Anyway, so they run these commercials, and it's now called PC Cleaner Pro. Well, yesterday, the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, for you mermite eaters, they busted them and shut them down. They got busted with over $120 million in consumer complaints this year alone.
Wow.
And what happens is, you call that stupid number on your you know, that comes on the infomercial. And they love to play this after sporting events, too. So if you're watching a game of footy, as soon as it's over, the stupid, hey, we can fix your PC. Are you getting by? Is your email running slow? You know, like the stupid jerk would come on. So anyway, people were calling his number and they're told initially it's like $29 to $49 to get this thing off of your computer. And, oh yeah, Blue Hippo. There's another one. Thank you, Bronwyn. And once you do that, they'll come on and go, oh, the problem looks worse than it really is. But we can send over a tech right now who could fix it for you. Or if you pay like, you know, $4.99, you get a lifetime subscription to get this thing's cured. And you will check on it all the time. And yeah, that was exactly the link I was going to send, Kelly. Thanks. Anyway, they finally got shut down. And that was, I have been raving about this and how stupid this commercial is and how many people are dumb enough to press that crap for God knows, going on almost 10 years now. And to see them finally get taken down. And I used to wonder, how can nobody stop these guys? Because they must be murdering, you know, the senior citizens on believing something is wrong with their computer. And even working at the Apple store, I've had people try to buy that crap for their Mac. And then it wouldn't work and they wouldn't give them the money back because they said, oh, you were supposed to know that it was PC only. So anyway, I was very happy when I saw this story. And
$120 million is what they swindled from computer people.
Wow.
From consumers.
Yeah.
Many of them seniors as well, older people that can't probably afford it or can't fight back.
Windwriter mentioned in the chat room about MacKeeper. Windwriter, I can tell you firsthand that I know a bunch of people from MacKeeper. As a matter of fact, we all know a bunch of people from MacKeeper because they come to Macworld and they make a scene. Their stuff actually works. But their question is there questionable advertising practices?
Yes.
But their software itself is actually really good. In fact, when I played with it for a while, I was going to tell people this one of the best things out, but I would have a hard time sending my old lady customers to a MacKeeper site to download MacKeeper. And then they're just, you know, scantily clad babes, you know, some Ukrainian hostage babes like walking around taking pictures. Like, I don't know. I couldn't really send people that. So I told people to use Clean My Mac, but their software itself is actually pretty badass. And it's the most inclusive utility kit out there for the price.
Well, I think I've never used it and I won't use it because of the way they advertise it. I have a hatred of MacKeeper that is based on the method of advertising. So I will stand.
And now you know why you and I are friends.
I will stand back and say I have never used it and I can't therefore offer any review as the service. But the way in which they do it, the fact it opens a tab without asking, the fact that when you close that tab, sometimes you get the, oh, are you sure you want to, thing that comes up. Oh, and when it says it scanned your computer, it says it's found a shed load of problems that probably aren't there. And I cannot stand the way they go about marketing it. And that shouldn't be allowed, the way that they are marketing it. It might be a fantastic product. I use Clean My Mac from MacPort, and I've got to say, I can't find a better piece of software out there to use.
You know what's funny? I know why they advertise the way they do, and I can, to defend my honor, because I didn't find out about the sleaziness until after. I met them when they first came out, before they got huge and before they started this advertising thing, and I tested it way back then, you know, I'm going to call it like 5-6 Macworlds ago. But since then, and the next time I saw them, I told them, I can't do it because the advertising is just insane. And it drives me crazy when I go to a site and I'm just trying to, you know, look up, you know, football scores. And the stupid thing pops over, like, and then I have to chase it down. And even ad blocker from Google Chrome won't work. But it turns out a long time ago, they bought this crazy package of ads. And it was done for a really, really cheap price. And they just keep doing it because they don't want to get rid of it. But I told them, well, then sell it to people who can use it. You'll make more money. And yeah, he said, the one guy, the American guy that works with him, he's like, I've been trying to convince them to do it, but they just insist on running the Mackie brands. But they basically have the Guthy Ranker package of TV commercials for internet.
And so the sad
you
part
always
is,
see, the Guthy Ranker can't get rid of that because if they do, they'll never get it back for the price, right?
Yeah.
Guthy Ranker buys the after the football game ads for something like $15,000 for every Sunday for like a month. So that's why as soon as any sports event's over, it's instantly an infomercial. Guthrie Rager doesn't even make that much stuff anymore. So they sell those commercials to other people like Billy Mays, like or now Anthony Sullivan, or, you know, whoever is doing the infomercial now. And currently there's a lot of these tools. There's WORX Tool Company or Rockwell Tool Company. They make some pretty decent tools. They are buying it from the Guthrie Rager Corp because they got the grandfather deal on nationwide advertising after 50 million people watched the Dallas Cowboys for like less than 15 grand. You can't even buy that locally in your own neighborhood.
Yeah. The thing I will say about Matt Keeper is that advertising aside, I don't know what the setup is because I've never used it, but there is some way where it will munch your entire 1Password database. And it is something that causes a not insignificant number of support tickets. People will go, I logged in today and now it's gone. It won't let me in. I can't find anything. Yeah, do you use MadKeeper? Yeah, I ran it yesterday. I don't know what's going on.
Oops.
So one of the things I will say about any sort of utility that promises to go stomping through your system is that you need to be aware of what it's going to do. And if you don't know what that thing is that it says it's going to do, don't do it. And that it doesn't matter if it's MadKeeper. It doesn't matter if you have a Mac. Whatever it is, if you're going to have something that goes through on a system level and does things for you that are supposed to make your computer better, have some idea what that is. Partly because you shouldn't let anything stomp through your system willy-nilly. And second of all, because if you need to get assistance with that later, you need to have some idea what it was that it was doing so that if it all goes to crap, you're able to tell somebody who can help you what it was that went wrong. So there's my PSA for today.
Excellent. No, good tip. Like that. If you want anything for your Mac, clean my Mac too.
Guaranteed. That is hands down. And the other product where they came out with Hider 2, which is very good too.
Yeah,
you're like, I want to keep my financials or my business plan, or I got plans to build a solid fuel rocket booster. Hider 2 is just epic.
Now then, do you want a Sphero 2.0?
Why, yes, as a matter of fact, I do.
Well, then, if you would like this Sphero, this very Sphero here, then all you have to do is go to gosphero.com / British Tech Network Giveaway with hyphens between each of those words, and you can win it. This very one that's sat in my hands, it is yours to have. British Tech Network, www.gosphero.com/ British Tech Network Giveaway. Put hyphens between British Tech Network and Giveaway and enter the competition there. Just send your email address in and with BTN and GoSphero, you can win a Sphero. There you go. Dead simple, dead easy, effortless. And I've got our review unit here. It's an Ollie. If you'd prefer the Ollie to the Sphero, just say so, and I'll send you the Ollie instead of. So you can have whichever one you want. You can have the Ollie or you can have the Sphero. But the Ollie is our review unit, so it may have some surface marks based on the way I've been driving it around the living room.
Loved by kids, hated by dogs.
No, it's fine. No. This is brilliant. I mean, the stunt mode on this is superb. It sends the kids into fits. It scares the crap out of my daughter. She runs.
Oh, no.
But the stunt mode in this is superb. You just turn your iPhone sideways and then you just wobble your fingers on it and the thing goes into an absolute fit. It's brilliant. I'm going to put a review up on that on the site soon. And you can have one or the other. It's your choice. A brand new box Sphero or a brand new box Dolly. It's gosphero.com/ British Tech Network Giveaway with hyphens between the last bit there. And that's it.
I love my Sphero. I took it to Science Night at the kids' elementary school last year, and it had more kids around it than any of the science experiments.
And they're really cool the way that they run it. And they've got an augmented reality game on here as well with it, which looks awesome. Looks really good. I'd like to have a play with that. Cool things. Doc, do you have a cool thing for us?
Yes, I do. Let me...
It's not your bandwidth, that's for sure.
Oh, that's evil. Is it working? Are we good?
No, you're a bit chopper vision, but go on.
No, I don't want to be chopper vision. What the heck's going on?
Stop the download on the port.
Hold on. No, I got it. I figured it out. 1 second.
Shall I do someone else and we'll come back to you? Jeff, do you have a cool thing for us?
Of course I do. And you should probably get your music ready because today we're traveling down the path of teledildonics.
I'll give over. Go on.
No, seriously. Okay, so there's this company called Kiru, and they have developed these two products that work together. It's like a vibrator for women and a masturbator for men, and they link together through a web interface so that you can have like remote sex encounters with another person. And so you hook the appropriate device to you, and then the other person can control it remotely. And right. And what they're saying is that the way the system is set up, it's secure because they're controlling the server that handles the go-between for the communication. And in that way, you can kind of keep it anonymous as far as the rest of the world goes.
Yeah, you think it's Bambi and she's 18 years old, but it really turns out to be Bubba and he's 57 and he's a bear.
Which is actually kind of funny. But
or the other way around. I like
the way it's set up is you buy the kit or you buy just the piece you need. And then you know the other person that's going to be involved. So if you want it to be Bubba the Bear, then get on with your badass self and that's okay. But if it's someone else, there you go. And they call it technology designed for lovers, hooks up to your computer via Bluetooth. So you don't need to have cables strung where that might be awkward or inconvenient. I just find it incredibly funny though, that they call it teledildonics and cyberdildonics.
And just if you wanted to know, Mac Observer will be doing a review on that next week. And the week after, they'll be giving away Jeff's review unit.
Only slightly used.
And the week after, they'll be giving away Bubba's.
Used only slightly more.
Bubba the Bear wants you to respect his life choices.
Bubba the Bear. I'm sure he was on the TV as a kid's character.
And who are we to judge?
You go, Bubba.
Any price on this, Jeff?
I forgot. I just brought up the page so I can tell you.
Holy moly!
Yeah, they're not cheap, but apparently they're supposed to be really good. Okay, so if you buy the kit where you get the masturbator and the vibrator together,
can we call their correct names, please? The Onyx and the Pearl, because I won't have to bleep that.
Right. So the Onyx, that's the masturbator, $249 on its own. The Pearl, which is the vibrator, $149. $378 is a kit. But if you and Bubba really are happy doing your thing together, you can get what's called the Onyx Couple Kit. And so it'd be two of the masturbators, and that's $468.
So that's the male couple, is it?
As opposed to right, that would be for the male couple. Got
you. Yeah, okay.
Interestingly, they don't have a package deal for two of the vibrators.
They don't. They should include a GoPro camera with that. And you talk about making money on the side.
Oh, yeah.
And make a podcast.
You can buy Bobby Eden's Onyx Experience, which is signed by Bobby Eden, apparently. And it's got Fleshlight inside, your favorite company, Jeffrey.
You know, one of these days, there's going to be one that just shows up in the mail. And at first, I'll look at it and I'll be like, what the? Oh. Yeah, I've actually never seen a Fleshlight in real life.
You know, they have different versions. You can buy them to match up your favorite porn stars. But JJ.
Yeah, see, that's just capitalism right there. And that's just paying attention to your audience and making sure that they have what they need to be satisfied customers.
I'm going to buy you a Fleshlight for Christmas, Jeff. And that's the last.
Collect them all.
And that's the last I want to hear about it.
Oh, the awesome thing is, if I get a Christmas present from you, I'm going to make sure that I open it in front of other people, knowing full well what's inside and knowing full well incredibly how awkward everyone around me will be. And it will be awesome.
I'm going to send you two, actually. One of them is to protect the gin that you're going to send back around inside it.
That's only fair. And I need to get you a new bottle of gin because you are out, right?
Well, it's gone. I loved it, every drop of it. But we're going to have to figure out another reason for me to come out to San Francisco to pick it up off you.
All right, sounds good.
Is there any word on that? Because I know a mutual friend was discussing
Macworld, it. iWorld Expo is off for this year.
Forever.
There's been talk about different things coming up and, you know, like alternate shows, but nothing concrete yet. Okay. You know, you could just plan a trip out to Colorado and
maybe
bring your whole family and I'll make sure that you guys have a blast while you're here.
Alternatively, come to the Bash in the UK. 4th of July.
You know, I didn't get to come last year, and I'd really like to make that happen this year.
Do it.
Me too.
The Bash is 3rd for the curry and 4th for the main Bash event day. You can buy the tickets already. In fact, we've sold a couple of tickets for next year already. So 4th of July, get your tickets online, and you'll find this poster, this banner, the Northern Bash. That's on the 6th of December, so it's in a couple of weeks. We're going to have a day of gaming and drinking and doing the gamer show quiz and having an Indian and having a good old time of it. It's £5 a ticket. Bring your own booze party at the Tweed Bank Hall in the Scottish Borders. I'm going up. Stephen Lowe, our guest, is coming up. Muller in the chat room, he's coming. I don't know if he's coming with me or not, but he's more than welcome if he wants to. And I've got one other seat left in the car if you want to come up with me. It'll just be a whole day of fun, just enjoying it. I've got a nice little bed and breakfast up there as well for the night, which has cost me £40, and it should be awesome. So get yourself up to the Gamer Show quiz. Buy your ticket online. The £5 just covers the cost of the hire of the hall, nothing else. It's nothing like the Summer Do. The Summer Do is on the 4th of July. If you want your tickets, you can book them now and get in there. Right. Kelly, what did you have as a cool thing?
Cocktails.
Cocktails. We like cocktails.
Yes, I have this here.
Wait, wasn't that just what Jeff talked about?
Yeah.
they certainly go well together.
Mine is all one word. His was two separate words. So mine is a kit that I apparently have to talk about while the lowest flying plane on Earth goes over my house. And it's a kit from, it's a guide from Studio Neat. And Studio Neat, you may remember because they make a little handy dandy device called the Glyph. They also make the Cosmonaut, which is a pretty awesome stylus. And they have some other interesting stuff that they do. So they've got this guide to some of the stuff that you should probably have if you're going to make a decent drink at home. And it was pretty awesome to get to read through this list and see sort of what there were that were things that people that they thought were the right things to have, like the Boston Shaker, and there's an ice kit that Neat makes, which is pretty nifty. Their simple syrup setup is something that I'm sort of curious about. I may end up picking one of those up at some point someday. And they talk about other things that you should probably have if you're going to make good cocktails at home. And I just thought this was a really nice list. And the nice thing about it for me is that it's pretty agnostic. It's not like, oh, if you're a whiskey person, here's the list of things you need to have. If you're a sake drinker, here's the list of things you need to have. This is a basic sort of all around. If you're going to have people at your house and make a cocktail once in a while, this is a good place to start, and you'll be pretty well armed for that adventure. And I thought that was really awesome. And so there you go. Not really techie at all. I just thought it was really nifty. So this is also good if you know somebody like, me, who has a bar, and maybe you would like to encourage development of some of those techniques, then, you know, if the bar book by Jeffrey Morgenthaler shows up in the mail, I certainly won't complain. So there you go.
Okay. There we go. And there's an awful lot of stuff here.
Yeah, and it's a good gift list. Well, there's the stuff that you probably ought to have, which really overall is not a lot of stuff. And then there's the non-essential but nice. And you can pick and choose on some of these. Like, you know, if you never make stuff that has club soda, you can skip that line altogether. A bottle of bitters is going to last you a really long time. A good juicer is going to last you a really long time. You know, some of the stuff is stuff that you probably should have as you build a bar anyway. You know, everybody should have a decent shaker and a decent jigger. So I thought that those were some really good suggestions. I thought their suggestions were solid. I also think that with Thanksgiving breathing down our necks, that it's entirely possible some folks are going to be shopping for some sort of year-end holiday. And this is a really good place to check to get some stuff, some ideas.
Excellent. Good pick. I like that.
Very cool. Hey, Kelly, I have a buddy of mine who's actually from Liverpool, but he lives down the street and he runs a really epic bar that you always see in my feed. And in mixing glass, the classic Yachty can go anywhere from like $250 to $400. And he replaces them with a standard issue $4 Pyrex beaker. And they're the exact same size, but the Pyrex actually is stronger and much, much cheaper on the dollar. So if you look in, when you get to the part where you need to buy a Yachty, which is a mixing glass, don't buy the crystal one with the Yachty pattern because it's crazy expensive. Just go buy a standard issue $4 Pyrex beaker and it will do exactly the same thing.
Yeah, they do point out that some of those are different. They mention one from Sur La Table. I think the one from Sur La Table is... like
207.
I want to say it's a $15 thing from
$207. Trust me.
It says one used, and I've seen it in person at Sur La Table, and I want to say that is a $15 endeavor. So it's not
still not $4.
Right, but there's ways that some of that stuff can be, you know, jiggered around. There's things that can be done for all of it, basically. You know, it's good to have a strainer of some kind. You can use whatever, you know, they recommend a fine mesh strainer. You can use, if you have a metal tea strainer that looks like that, you can use that. That's what I use for mine all the time. You know, you don't need that necessarily specific old fashioned glass. So anyway, it was a good list. I enjoyed it, and I liked that they weren't necessarily pushing any of this stuff. And like, oh, and if you don't make a cocktail with this, it will be 18% less delicious and no one will ever come over and you will be judged for the rest of your adult life based on the cocktail you made that didn't include this ingredient. So I liked that they didn't take that attitude. It was just here. You should check out some of this stuff.
Will do. The finer points of cocktail making, as discussed by Kelly and Doc. Rob. What do you have for us, sir?
It was a Kickstarter project. Now it's over on Indiegogo. It's called The Pearl, and it's a compact mirror and USB rechargeable battery.
This is relevant to my interests.
So women just throw it in. It's a 3,000 milliamp hour, so it can charge an iPhone 6 Plus all the way to the top. So nice little thing. Now, the problem was it was on Kickstarter. It got fully funded. Then somebody sent in the worst DMCA takedown notice I've ever seen. Kickstarter agreed with this horribly written DMCA takedown notice, paused the project. So they went over to Kickstarter and then they raised another 17,000 there. They had raised like 40,000 over on Kickstarter. So, and they're offering delivery before Christmas.
Didn't they?
So, and it's $25.
And they, and where did they move to from Kickstarter? Cause they had to move.
Indiegogo.
After Indiegogo.
Yeah,
they went to, they're on Indiegogo. If you look on Kickstarter, there's some stories there on background. And the guy that I've talked with a little bit of the guy that's running it. Poor, I handle DMCA takedown notices. I've never seen as poorly written a DMCA a takedown request as the one that Kickstarter approved. Actually, Kickstarter, in my opinion, should not have approved it, should not have taken it down. No, not based on what was published. But that said, they're over on Indiegogo, and it's just $25. And so it's a cheap price. And if you have looking for something for the lady in your life, compact mirror and battery charger, it's a nice combo.
And it's legit. The people that are behind this are the people behind Hyperjuice.
Right. Hyperjuice
battery folks.
If you remember iStick, that came out this summer, it was another Kickstarter project they had that came to fruition. So these aren't the first, these guys aren't the first time around. They've done other projects. So
yeah,
it's just straight USB. I mean, it'll charge anything. So you go
and they hit their stretch goals, so it'll be a 2.1 amp, so it'll charge even faster.
So yeah,
good stuff.
You can even charge the GoPro on the end of your Jeff masturbator with this while it's being
perfect.
Used. You need a bit longer cable, I suppose, but yeah, there you go. That works.
I guess, if you want to design, what you should design is a vibrator / battery pack. So you can use the battery vibrator to charge your iPhone when they're not using the vibrator.
Isn't one of the benefits of a compact that it's got some powder in it as well, though?
Some what?
Some powder in it. I thought it was
usually it's just a mirror.
No, it's not. It's but it had powder in it. I remember my mother having them.
Well, that's different.
It can.
Yeah, that's 1973. Yeah, that's different. Wake up, you, and grow up. Come on. Join the 21st century.
I guarantee you I could walk in the bathroom and come back with one with the mirror and powder in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one I actually fund. Well. I don't fund many. I talk about them on my show every week. I talk about different Kickstarter projects. This is one of the few that I actually did fund because I was like, wow, Christmas gift and tax write-off.
Oh, they're talking about delivery for Christmas as well. It's not like the middle of next year or anything like they normally are.
Yeah, I've got one Kickstarter project I funded 2 years ago for a Christmas present. It's still out there waiting.
Yeah, I'm still waiting on the TrackR. That's supposed to be in January.
And the best bit about this one is that it's something that was designed for women that A, is not pink, B, is actually useful. C is also useful in another way because you can have a mirror in it as well as having the battery on the bottom. Because I carry both of those things, it would be nice if they were one device. This is totally something I would put on my Christmas list. And, let's be honest, in some respects, I'm not the best example of being a girl. And this is totally something I would have in my purse, no question.
My daughter adores pink. How dare you?
Well, my wife, her phone is running out of charge. And she carries a compact, so this takes care of two issues at once.
Precisely.
Husband of the
year. There's nothing wrong with being a girl that likes pink. I'm just not that person. That's all. Husband of the year. Just because you make some... Shrinking pink is a horrible thing that has happened to the technology industry. Kelly. We're going to make a smaller one and that's going to be the girl one. And that's not cool.
It was a throwaway line, mate.
I know. But this is something that always has really bothered me. Like, we made a smaller pink one. Why don't you like it? And it just doesn't work that way. So I really like that this is something that is really thoughtful, that is something that acknowledges that there are women who have technology. And I think that that's great. So,
Sadly, though, Kickstarter is really giving them a raw deal.
There's a Barbie book I wanted to tell you about.
Doc, what have you got for us as a cool thing, dude?
All right, the name of this product is going to sound like it came from Jeff, but it didn't come from Jeff. we met these guys at Macworld, and I finally got around to getting my hands on one, and I thought, well, now it's going to be all bugged off because I got a 6+, but anyway, this is known as a grip and shoot, not to be confused with something that Jeff Gammon would like.
Moving on.
You shake this bad boy out. Right. So in there, I have the old 5S, and on the bottom, it has a neat little, stud, like Jeff Gammon, to connect to your phone. Okay. So now take the second piece out, and it's a pistol grip. And basically what you do is you connect the two together. So when you're out shooting your videos, you got a nice stable thing to hold. But wait, there's more for $19. No, there's two buttons here. And what they do is they control the zoom in and zoom out function. And this button here controls the record and stop recording or shoot a picture, shoot a picture. The other thing that's really neat is the base is designed to fit on a standard issue tripod. And if you have it sitting on the tripod like so, but you need to take it off, you don't have to go through the whole rejiggering to get it off. You just slide this little guy, and then this piece pops off. So then you can leave this stuck to what it's stuck to. And when you're ready to put it back on, you just slide this bugger back in there, and you're all good to go. So I'm like, this is great. And I finally got my hands on it, and this is going to suck because, well, I got this giant phone. And they said, no, because also with the kit, it comes with this guy, which is a little spreader, can fit anything from an iPhone 6 Plus to a Windows phone, Nokia, like super size whatevers, you know, the 1020. So I can even take the 6 Plus and pop it in there, and I have a pretty wicked googly. So I like this thing because it's super, super, super stable. Yeah, don't pull this thing out when the cops are around, especially not in Ferguson. That would get you beat down. One, because they don't want you to record them on video, but two, because it does look like a Glock handle. Anyway, this thing is super cool. It's very stable, and you'd be amazed at how much difference holding your phone like this versus doing the old hand thing will change the way your videos come out. Also really great for like concerts, you know, whatever. So this is the Grip and Shoot. Again, do not confuse it with a Jeff Gammett product.
Yeah.
This is pretty epic.
We saw that, and I've got to say, I flew at that, and I was like, wow, I've got so many things I could use this for. And the one thing that upset me was that the cold shoe mount on the top is not a standard cold shoe dimension. It's proprietary. And I'd have bought 20 of these off them there, and then if it had been a standard one. It's a great...
I didn't bother to check that, but now I'm looking for... I have so many cold shoe things around. I'm looking for something
We wanted to use it for the shotgun mic. We were walking around. So we could have it as a kind of, you know, use it a mini boom. And gutted, absolutely gutted when we found out it wasn't a standard cold shoe fitting. Because it is fantastic. It's a great little device. Super. Excellent.
Yeah, this would work great for a shotgun mic, or even for the, you know, the side bang LED that, you know, that you always carry. But I guess the tech in here is the Bluetooth, you know, trigger, so that you can trigger your phone or whatever's, you know, there's that. Anyway, it's cool.
I've got a cool thing, but I've left it on the opposite side of the office, and I can't remember what it was called. And I've only just realised. Awesome. I thought it was here, and it's not. That's my old iPhone case. I bought a red iPhone case that's like a two-part thing. It's kind of like the OtterBox one, but it was only a tenner off Amazon. And it's superb. No, I'm nearly finished now. That was a big show. We'll be back again next week. We've got a fantastic lineup again for you. We've got the Mac Show tomorrow. Tom Merritt's on, so that should be good fun as well. And we'll have a great time of it, I'm sure. Where can we get a hold of you, Doc?
You can find me on the Standard Issue places on the internet stream. We're at DOCROCK just about everywhere. And then on TUAW, the unofficial Apple weblog. And slowly but surely getting our new project off the ground for MacUser.pro. We're working on it.
Okay, mate.
It's mostly me because I've been traveling, but we're back.
Okay.
Dr. Allgood, stop making that sad face because he's the one that yells at me to hurry up and get my part together.
Cool. He's sad because he was even fashionably later than you were.
Nice.
Jeffrey, where are you, sir?
I'm usually hanging out at MacObserver.com, and then you can hear me on the TMO Daily Observations podcast and Apple Context Machine and the iOS show and here and apparently pretty much every other podcast ever made. And when I'm not doing all of that, then you can also find me at freshbrewedtales.com, where I talk about the ridiculous things that I see people doing in coffee shops.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. Kelly, where are you?
You can find me on Twitter and on app.net as Verso. You can also find me explaining stuff over at themacobserver.com, sometimes on the Daily Observation podcast there. And you can also hear Mike Rose and I talk about things as well as stuff on the after show.
Excellent, mate. And last, but my name is Lisa. Rob, where are you, sir?
You can find me at todayinios.com. And I actually have a Google Plus community, todayinios.com/community, which is a Android boys free zone. So no fanboys there from Android, no spammers. I kick them all out. I don't let them in. So it's actually a civil Google Plus community talking about all things iOS. And then of course you can email me, Rob.
That's not true. That's impossible. You're one of those PC scammer guys.
No, man, I'm pretty brutal. When I actually scan every Google Plus person that asks to join, I look at their history, and if they have any positive Android stuff, I don't include them. They're gone.
Good. Nice. God,
that's pretty hardcore.
Don't they get one strike even?
No, I don't even let them in. Yeah. And then if they do any spamming, that's it. One strike rule, you're out. You spam, gone.
That's harsh, dude. Jeez.
Well, hey, okay. I just sent a request.
Got a lot of posts and a lot of good community. Nobody treats, you know, there's no ill will. There's not people saying, hey, I've got a question. And then all of a sudden people go, go get an Android phone. Or, you know, it's none of that crap.
I'm going to go on UK2 and buy robthefascist.com.
Hey, if you want to have a civil Google Plus community, you have to be a Nazi about it.
No,
you
do. We've got a civil Google Plus community. Ours are fantastic. There's nothing better than a BTN fan. No one ever writes anything on there that no one ever writes anything on there.
Yeah, but that's BTN. That's not the internet. I totally understand where Rob is coming from on this.
Okay. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next week with UK2 sweets to give away, as well as the Ollie and the Sphero to talk about. Watch this space. Thanks for listening. See you soon.